As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
With the preseason in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big
preseason
story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning, right in your podcast face.
Saturdays are the most fun day of the week, and with that, you get the most fun pod right here on the Athletic NBA Show. It's called the Saturday Slam and Jam. You'll hear me, Andrew Schlecht, and my co-host Alex Spears break down the past week of NBA basketball. Bring on a smart beat writer to give you the lowdown on their team. And then we have a trivia game, Andrew versus the Beat, where I just try not to humiliate myself. So when you're raking your leaves, brewing your coffee, or just taking care of stuff around the house, listen to Saturday Slam and Jam right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
We're the group that works like they do, the group that embraces some of our mantras. We talk about getting better every day. We talk about playing together. When you do those things, you end up on a stage like this. They compete. They're NBA champions. I couldn't be more happy for our players, for our team, for our organization, for our city of Milwaukee. NBA champions. Yeah. Big time.
This is Nerder She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partner.
What? Can't make this up, man. These dudes, organization, what we put together.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. It's Nerder She Wrote. Hey, it's the week before the season too, which means preview week. And we do previews on this show, and normally it's award previews. I'm Dave DeFore, joined as I am most weeks by Seth Partnow. What's up, Seth? You just got home from the UK.
Yeah, I'm feeling fine. Good night's sleep. Not a lot of jet lag. Full of energy this morning. Ready to go.
Recording from bed, which is just a power move. And then Mo DeKeel.
Oh,
cuz.
Killing me.
Listen,
killing me.
Full disclosure on this podcast. I'm just
put
jealous.
Put a shirt on.
I could never bring myself to record like on the bed. I understand stuff's going on, but it's I don't know, man. I don't have the juice for that. I don't feel like I could get away with it.
This isn't supposed to be video. It's supposed to be audio, and you're just selling me
well,
out
I'm
here.
I'm setting the scene here.
I would take a nap. To see this. I would take a nap if I was recording
tapestries
from bed.
Tapestries on the wall, and I mean, is that a miniature Larry O'Brien trophy over there in the corner? So on the preview show last year for the awards, we had Ben Taylor on, and we couldn't come up with a better guest, so we asked Ben to come back, the Redux Part 2 of our awards show. And I want to say off the bat, Ben, that You picked Luka Doncic to win MVP on the show last year. Do you have anything to say for yourself? Or
disgraceful. What was I thinking?
I mean, were you just caught up in the moment? What was this?
Kool-Aid, David. It's Kool-Aid. And the way I feel about that pick is the way Seth looks in his bed right now.
I can't wait till you make the same pick again. Screw it. Just go. Keep picking
it. I asked Dave to make sure that I get some of my picks from last year, because if I don't remember my old picks, I will just keep picking them over and over and over again. I picked the Spurs to win the title like 6 years in a row once.
I don't think that you can choose Tyrese Haliburton to win Rookie of the Year again.
I'll take Ben Simmons.
Yeah, yeah. But you did pick Draymond to be the comeback player of the year if you're coming back from sucking.
That was not bad.
Yeah, that was a good pick.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, then let's jump right in, because we got a lot of awards to get through, and I want to start with the big one, MVP. This is the thing that sort of defines the season. Last year, Nikola Jokic wins the award, which Seth predicted on this show, and it's the only prediction that was actually made on the show. None of the other ones are worth even listening to, because we were so right. You guys are just going to be bored if you go back and listen, but Seth called Jokic as MVP. Well, we did our own votes, and I took the tallies in secret. There's only four of us, so it's not hard to figure out who voted for who. KD gets two votes this year. Giannis gets one, and Jokic gets one. KD was my pick last year. I thought he looked great coming back from injury. And if he had not dealt with some injuries during the season, there's a pretty good chance, Seth, that he could have won the MVP last year. I mean, he was the front runner when he went down.
I mean, he certainly had one of the sort of per minute arguments that a lot of players had, but he didn't play enough last year. And I think that MVP is always an award that encompasses an element of production, but also of narrative. Last season was almost sort of unfortunately, in because he was fully deserving, but it was almost Jokic by default, in that a lot of the other players who had like compelling narratives just didn't play enough for whatever reason. But going into this season, KD, who I think was the best player in the playoffs last year, and has the narrative kind of win sales behind him, I think that's what makes him the favorite going into the season as MVP this year.
You picked Jokic, Ben? For a repeat?
I did. You know, it just, you told me about this podcast last night at 11:30, and you said, come up with an MVP by the time we record in the morning. And he was the first name that popped into my head.
Hold on. Ben, you did not think of the MVP just last night. Stop with this bullshit. Don't try to put this on Dave. We've all had our own thoughts of who could win the MVP since the preseason gets going. Don't do that. I'm the only one that can take shots at Dave. That's sometimes, but that's it. We ain't letting a guest come into the house and start trying to throw the furniture around.
And Mo was the last one to give me his picks. So he knows what he's talking about here. Mo, picked KD, right?
He gave you his picks after I did?
He gave it to me on the Zoom call
seems
here.
Seems impossible.
So Mo picked KD and I picked Giannis. Now, last year we talked about this quite a bit, right? Like Giannis had the anti-narrative. He had won two, you know, they hadn't won a title, and it was kind of a big deal that they, you know, had the way that they lost in the bubble. And he had that anti-narrative. I think that he has a little bit of a narrative push behind him now, because he had that, I mean, just amazing performance in the finals. I think the Bucks are going to be really, really good this year. I think they might push for the one seed. They don't need to experiment like they did last year. They kind of figured it out. I think he's got a good shot.
Yeah. So here's my thing about KD, right? He just looks poised to do it. I disagree a little bit about last year, you know, with the injuries. I didn't feel like he was a front runner even when he went down. I felt like it was Jokic, Embiid, and Curry came on strong in the middle towards the end. But the injury stuff was what held me back last year. I feel like having watched him play through it, having watched him go through the Olympics, I think he's just poised to go. And the thing I love about KD, guys, is that he just loves to hoop. Right. And I don't think we're going to get a lot of rest days from him. If he stays healthy, I think he's going to be the MVP. I think he's going to be top three in scoring. I think he's going to have a whole narrative behind him, especially with this whole Kyrie debacle. You know, it might just be him and Harden. So I think there's going to be more on his plate. And I think that's going to help him in that stuff. And I think coming back from the injury a year afterwards, much more comfortable. I'm way more confident about KD winning the MVP than anybody else.
Well, Seth, let me ask you statistically, what does a KD MVP season need to look like on a team that has the expectations that this one has? Because it's not like he's going to get a lot of credit for being a rising tide, right? Like, even with the Kyrie stuff, that team should still be a finals favorite. And I don't think he's going to get the rub if they're the one seed. I just don't think people are going to care all that much. He's going to have to do something himself individually. What do you think that looks like?
I mean, if he has any sort of anything close to the efficiency he had last season, but again, it does have to be married with that level of team success.
Right.
The narrative behind him is he is, you know, as Mo said, there is sort of that lever of, you know, he's overcoming the distraction of Kyrie Irving to, you know, help lead this team to, you know, 58 wins or whatever, while scoring 29 a night on, you know, 62 shooting or something like that. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. And I think that based on what we saw last season, especially last playoffs in the Olympics, I think that's not an unreasonable expectation going into the season.
Do you have an argument against KD, Ben?
No,
he didn't vote for him.
No, he was one of my three guys. So I think you have to look at the narratives that we've discussed. I think Jokic for me is 06 Nash, which is in 2005. Oh, he shouldn't win. There's this argument against him. There's this other guy who's more established who should have it. He's a unique kind of player. I'm not sold on him. You know, Nash is floppy-haired Canadian guy playing on a 29-win Suns team that overachieves. Jokic is Eastern European. Is he thin? You know, all this stuff that like goes into it that probably shouldn't. But there's no Jamal Murray this year. And historically, we can look at how players perform with and without guys on the floor and with and without guys in the lineup. And Jokic's numbers just got better without Murray last year. I think it was 24 games off the top of my head. He was a machine. And so I like the Denver team still. They were completely depleted health-wise in the playoffs. I think you're going to get a better version of Michael Porter Jr. I wouldn't be surprised if someone has him on another award ballot we have coming up. if they're healthy and they're the other thing is health, right? It's going to be an 82-game season. So even with some of the things we see today, you know, in the old days, you needed to play like 72 to really win most of the time, maybe 66, 68 games. But anybody who's up, like if Jokic runs 82 games and the Nuggets win like 54 to 58 games, he's at the least going to be there. So then the question is, who are the other guys? Durant for me is if Harden plays like 65 or 70 games and Durant plays 65 or 70 games, I don't know how you're going to, unless Durant just has some sort of like outlier all-time season, I don't see how he's going to have a huge narrative push. And then there's one more guy on my ballot, which Dave, I cannot believe you did not vote for. How did you not pick Steph Curry?
I picked Giannis. Steph would have been second for me, but okay, I don't trust Steph that Warriors team at all. See, like it's a lot of weight on Klay Thompson's legs.
We disagree on that.
I don't want to derail us here with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson talk. We will. But yeah. Seth, you had a point that you wanted to make here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
No, I think that you raised your point against Steph is a little bit would be my argument against Jokic in that, yeah, if the Nuggets are, you know, in that 54, 57 win range, he's probably going to be right there. I'm not sure that's just that the level we saw from Jokic over that sort of post Murray piece last season I don't know how sustainable that is across the whole season and how well that translates into the Nuggets being, you know, a top two or three seed in the West.
I will say he skipped the Olympics, right? For this reason.
Yeah. But I still, it's even with that, it's just, you do wonder if the Nuggets have enough in what is, as always, a loaded West to be that good, to be good enough to have their guy be in the MVP vote. And to Ben's sort of other narrative point, I mean, I think on sort of the pure merits, you're probably correct that there might not be much to pick from between the end of the season between Durant and Harden. But let's be real, who wins that popularity contest if it comes down to assigning credit?
Giannis.
So this isn't
see, this is
well, yes, that. But no, but between the two of those, I mean, I think like last year I talked a fair amount about how Harden was having an MVP level season before he got hurt and just the level of backlash because of how he exited Houston. And I'm not sure that the anti-Harden sentiment has really died that much, even if, you know, in the Nets, the anti-anyone sentiment is probably being sucked up a lot by Kyrie.
This is what led me to Giannis. Right. I feel like the voters aren't going to go for Jokic again unless he has. I mean, it's going to have to be a spectacular season. Right. He'll have to have a better season than he had last year. The Nuggets will have to perform better than they did without Murray. I just think that's not as likely. As much as I love Bones, I think Bones Highland's going to play for them. But I believe in the Bucks. I mean, I think Giannis is one of the two best guys in the league. So kind of just landed there. So it seems like I'm right here. You guys have argued my point.
Well, I mean,
you're,
I've defended you already on the pod. Don't make me have to come get you. Giannis is right up there, and I think he's going to have the narrative behind it and everything that goes with it. I mean, the Bucks looked really good, and he looked really good in their preseason game against the Jazz and all that. It's just interesting, and you know, I didn't vote for him, but it's just interesting how none of us had looked at Joel Embiid, because I know we've all kind of penciled the Sixers to have a drop with the Ben Simmons thing. But I'm just saying, guys, what if they fly, right? Like along those lines, like he's a guy, you know, it's going to be on his back. You know, and it's going to be on both ends of the court. You know, I don't know if we're going to have much drop off. I think he would have won the MVP had he not missed 20 games. You know, if he missed 10 games, I think he would have had a good chance of winning that MVP award. So I think we are kind of sleeping on it a little bit, myself included. But it's just so much. It's funny because I picked KD and there's a lot surrounding them. There's still so much more surrounding the Sixers in terms that we don't know. But I think that's a guy we have to kind of dark horse it, keep an eye on.
That's a great point. And in particular, because of his ability to also bring it on the defensive end, like he's going to get a lot of credit for that. If they're top seven defense without Ben Simmons and they've got Embiid in there, certainly he's going to get a lot of buzz. And you're right. What if Embiid just does what Jokic did? And when you look at the success that team has when Embiid is on the court, if he can play 70 games, I think he can win MVP.
Yeah, but that's the question.
Right.
If he plays and he plays a ton of games, all the stuff you guys are saying, I think, is there. And
too many
he
ifs.
Would have, it's a lot of ifs. If he does it, I think he's going to be primed to take the award, both in terms of team success, defensive standing, defensive player of the year vote. His raw points per game, all that stuff. But it's just like, I am not confident that he's going to string together a 76-game season.
Okay. You guys ready to move on to Defensive Player of the Year? Any last thoughts?
I just want to – we should throw out there's one name none of us has mentioned, and it's kind of funny, is none of us have said LeBron. And it's that sort of – which is – I mean, given how well the West seems to be set up for them to be just almost – I don't want to say by default, but certainly with the Clippers and Nuggets sort of hampered, their chances, the Lakers' chances of being the one seed in the West are seem to be pretty good. And, you know, LeBron is, you know, still until proven otherwise, you know, one of the two to three best players of all time at risk of, you know, treading on Ben Taylor territory.
Can I say something that's going to sound ridiculous, but I actually think this is true. Russell Westbrook may hurt LeBron's chances at a regular season MVP. Cause I think Russ is going
to, I'm just glad I didn't have to be the
one. But Russ is going to have, I think he's going to have a good regular season. I think, I mean, Russ was awesome when he got healthy last year for the Wizards, and that's why they made the play-in. I think that having Anthony Davis healthy and having Russell Westbrook healthy, I think that stuff is going to take away from LeBron. People are already, they're always looking for ways to detract from LeBron anyway. And I'm not, you guys know me, like I'm fair about LeBron. I'm not, I don't hold him up too high or too low or whatever, but that's the truth is that people do want to knock him down. I think that this will be an excuse to. Now, if he does 27, 8, and 8, and they're the one seed, LeBron is going to be in the MVP race. Like there's no doubt about that. I just don't think he can win it because the narrative stuff, it hurts him.
Oh, you're sleeping on the LeBron and Laker media hype train.
We'll see what the Disney machine does to pump up LeBron's MVP chances in year 19, which is pretty amazing. All right. Defensive player of the year. This one is a no-brainer. And actually, like, we had 3 votes for Gobert and 1 for Giannis, which, by the way, Giannis was my number 2 pick, Mo. So it's not like you're in bad company there. Like, Giannis is a game changer.
I'm happy to be the only one right.
I mean, and here's the thing. You may be, because I don't know if Gobert can win this award again. Do you guys?
Yeah, I didn't say Gobert was going to win the award. I said he's likely to be the most deserving player. But again, because of this narrative stuff, and you know, if you've seen my Twitter in the last however long, it's 0 days since the last Rudy Gobert idiot. I mean, this notion that he gets played off the floor and gets schemed around and Yaya is so persistent that I can't imagine him having a good enough defensive season to overcome that in the minds of enough people. I can imagine it. It's hard for me to get there in terms of thinking that enough people will see past what is the ridiculous noise about like his supposed shortcomings in not making Bojan Bogdanovic into, you know, a passable playoff defensive four.
It's the same problem that Giannis had last year, right? Like right. They're just not, I mean, the narrative side of it too. But just to go in with Giannis, I just think Giannis has that ability to really be an all around defender type guy. You know, I think he's going to be able, again, I just think he's going to go full throughout all year. You know, you guys are picking right. for him to be MVP, or Dave did.
And
part of that goes both sides. He plays it on both ends and things like that. I think he's more likely to win Defensive Player of the Year instead of the MVP, just because I think he's going to bring it defensively. And I think they're going to need him to, you know, listen, I know PJ Tucker isn't, you know, people always kind of say like he's not quite the defender and things like that. He makes life hard for other guys, and it allows him to kind of Giannis to chill. But Giannis is going to have to step up on some of these guys in some of these regular season games and have to guard the KDs more often and things like that. I think it opens up that opportunity for them. And, you know, I think that's why I think he's going to end up winning it. And I think he's going to be deservedly winning it. I know Seth was saying, you know, Gobert could win it every year.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top 3 things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I considered Giannis actually, but I do think that since we're getting stories about how he's still kind of having lingering knee pain from that the hyperextension he suffered against Atlanta, I'm wondering if this is going to be, you know, a mid 60s game season, because you know, they're a team that knows they don't have anything to prove in, you know, November through March. And, you know, it seems like from some of his quotes kind of in the playoffs and afterwards that he's kind of gotten away. And I can speak to this. He was a guy that you had to, you know, to drag off the practice floor. He would be mad if you held him out of practice or a game for precautionary reasons. And he seems like as he's getting older, has kind of understood that, you know, yeah, you want to play every game, but February in Washington doesn't matter as much. So if you miss that one, okay. So I do think that there's a decent chance that just the volume of contribution is a little bit lower for him this year.
Yeah, and Gobert doesn't have to deal with the same his job is just different, right? Like, so it's just an easier job for Gobert, and because of scheme, obviously. What do you think, Ben? I mean, is there any chance that Gobert can possibly win it? I think Embiid's got a shot.
Yeah, that's why we all picked him.
No, I mean, no. We picked him because we believe in truth and justice. And
no, I think he can defense. Win it again. No, he can win it again. Sure. I mean, if none of these guys pop and aren't healthy, and you know, you don't have what we talked about, Embiid, Giannis is there. I had three other guys on my board. I think Draymond's too old for a regular season run. I don't think Golden State's going to have the sort of team defensive success that you need for the reward. The award.
Wait, you don't think they're going to be a top five defense again like they were last year?
I do not. See, we got to get to Golden State later.
We will.
You and I are seeing them very differently.
Yeah.
And it factors into how I see these awards playing mm-hmm. out. So the other two guys that we haven't mentioned, one is Bam, who's gotten voter love before. I think Miami's going to be quite good, but I don't know like what kind of sustained regular season that means. You know what I mean? I don't know if Jimmy Butler has a great regular season. I don't know if they don't click until the playoffs. I don't know if Lowry flies in the regular season, but they're there. And then the other sleeper, and I'm interested if you guys agree with me here. I just don't think he probably has the chops. The other sleeper to me on my board was Miles in Indiana.
Hmm. Now with Carlisle there, that is interesting because they're going to have a little bit more national media paying attention to that kind of stuff with them.
They're just ready to overachieve with Carlisle. So you start with that. Yeah, you start with that, and you kind of extrapolate out from there.
What about a guard or a wing? You guys think Drew Holiday has a shot at all? Like, I mean, Mo, like you mentioned Giannis, and that defense is going to be awesome. But what if Drew Holiday gets a lot of credit for what he does at point of attack?
It's hard. It's hard at that point because I think the defense and that's where kind of the narrative side of these things get pushed and stuff like that. I think a lot more credit would go to Giannis for the defense, even if Holiday's great at point of the attack. Like he would have to be so amazing. Like he would have to basically nobody can ever score on him at, like the entire series, right? He has to give up no points, you know, like it'd have to be at an unbelievable clip. And I just think it's so hard from there.
Yeah.
The interesting I thought about perimeter players, and this is actually going to be an interesting sort of meta commentary on how much the supposed like rule changes and emphasis have affected the game. As of the way the game was played through the playoffs last year, it's hard for a perimeter guy to have the defensive impact just because you can't touch a guy. You know, if you're guarding too closely, you get these nonsense foul calls of guys jumping sideways into you and stuff like that. If that stuff starts to get cleaned up a little bit and you can actually like guard a guy on the perimeter, then I can see it being possible for a guy, you know, like a Holiday, like a Kawhi, if healthy, a Jimmy Butler, someone in sort of that area to kind of come in and really impact that award the way that like Tony Allen used to back in the day. But I feel like that would be a pretty big, like stylistic change in how you can actually play defense on the perimeter. And I think that's more impact than like these new points of emphasis are likely to have.
I agree there. Okay. This one's tricky. Rookie of the year. Obviously we know it's going to be, you know, probably one of the guys who's already pretty good. And it's very much going to be about opportunity. And we got, with four people, three different guys got votes. Two votes for Cade Cunningham, a vote for Jalen Green, and a vote for Jalen Suggs. The Cade one feels kind of obvious, right? Like, best player, going to have the ball in his hands a lot. I mean, you know, what do you guys see? Like, Ben, Cade was the guy that you picked. What kind of season do you expect out of him as a rookie? I mean, like, we know about the playmaking. We know he's going to be at least a league average defender from day one, which is, I mean, just fantastic. I mean, the defense has been really good so far. What does he have to do, do you think? 15-8? Is that rookie of the year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know.
What if Jalen Green scores 25 points a game, though? See, this is what you guys aren't thinking about. Mo picked Jalen Suggs, and I'm assuming for similar reason. Like, look, Jalen Green is going to have an ultraviolet green light, and it's just going to – I mean, he is – have you guys seen his first step?
Yeah, but it's not
– No, you can't see it.
No, but it's – Go ahead, Mo. The thing you're not really looking at, though, is there's a lot of guys on that Houston Rockets team that are going to have the ultra green – it's going to be Kevin Porter Jr. Is going to have a lot of opportunities. Christian Wood's going to have a lot of opportunities. You know, I don't know how many opportunities Şengün's going to get. I want him to have more, but I don't know if he'll get a lot, but there's a lot of guys there that are going to touch on the ball a lot. That's going to make it difficult. Whereas my pick being Jalen Suggs was because he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. Like, for me, if you're Orlando, you got to just constantly give it to him. And let's just see if you're the guy everybody thinks you are. I think he can be a star player. I think that's something we're going to see throughout this season. I think with Cade, and I like Cade a lot, I think almost Cade has the better upside, but I think it's just going to take a little longer to get there. I don't know if he's going to just blow it out throughout the regular season, the way that would get you a Rookie of the Year award. Because we also know that's an award that you got to kind of dazzle a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, and it depends on when you hit too, because there are guys that start out great but they'll fizzle out in like January, February. And really, you got to start hitting your stride January, February. If you want to win this award, ease into the season, get good. What's up, Seth? Cade playing for Dwayne Casey, is that worry you at all as far as his chances of being able to be, let's just say, special versus just a good player?
Well, this is again,
and this is year one, by the way, not in the future. Yeah, no, I just mean year one.
We've talked a lot about how team success is going to affect the other awards. I think that Houston and Orlando are going to be bad enough that, like, the numbers that Green and Suggs put up are going to come with just a grain of salt. Like, the over under
so
points per game versus team wins. Which side would you take in either of those bets?
But I just want to push on that a little bit. That wasn't always the case with Rookie of the Year, right? Rookie of the Year normally was a guy on a crappy team because normally he was a top three pick and was on a lottery squad, right?
When did that change? Like, when did Malcolm Brogdon become? But the discourse,
I think it changed before that a little bit. But
the discourse of this guy, I know Booker got a lot of that. It was empty calories, like empty stats on a bad team. Booker got a ton of that. But it just seems like that has become a thing that is a little bit more common. But I'm with you, Mo. Like, I think if you have – I mean, if Suggs is at 22 points a game or 20 points a game, he's going to be in the – like, we just know. Like, that's a no-brainer. And he should. If you're a rookie and you can score 20 points a game, I don't care how bad. If whatever team you're on, if you're scoring 20 points a game in the NBA, you're doing something.
Wait, you guys think Suggs can score 20 a game? Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, he's going to have an opportunity.
Well, no, I don't think
he's
going to
have an opportunity, right? He's going to have the ball in his hands.
I don't know.
I mean, even if he's scoring 18 points a game, but has a couple of game winners, because he's going to be the guy I think they go to down the stretch.
Half-court bank shots.
Yeah, I mean – listen, beat UCLA. I'm happy. That's probably the biggest reason why he gets the award for me. But along those lines, so if he hits clutch shots, big opportunities and those things, that carries a lot of weight. And maybe it's not necessarily a flashy 23, 24 point average. But as long as it's showing that, like, hey, I'm a ball player. Like, that's really all it is in terms of rookie of the year type situation. And I think that's the standards to me for rookie of the year is not how many wins your team got. It's how good are you? Are you better than the other rookies in that class? And I think there's just areas where I look at those other guys and I don't see anybody really having that full opportunity the way Suggs is.
I think that's a fair point, Mo. I think part of the change you're talking about in that the rookie of the year used to be the guy who scored 26 on a terrible team is the way we've talked about being a good, impactful player just overall has changed. And this played out a little bit, I think, last year when we, you know, the LaMelo versus Anthony Edwards debate is like, oh, yeah, Anthony Edwards, very promising season, did all this, did all that. But LaMelo Ball, like, made the Hornets better, made the Hornets relevant even. And then that's, even though he didn't do what Dave said and kind of ease into the season, he missed a big chunk of that meat of the season. The fact that he was able to be impactful in ways that were observable, is almost what played into him getting that over a guy who probably after the coaching change was not an empty calories guy, but largely was before that.
He came. So I think Anthony Edwards actually came on too late, and he improved month over month over month, which is what that's he's a rookie. That's what you're supposed to do. So our Cade, I think, probably should be the favorite. I haven't looked at the odds. I'm assuming he is because I expect him to be the best player out of that group. But I'm sticking with Jalen Green, guys. I just think Jalen Green, of the guys he's going to be competing against for the ball on his own team, is going to be the most exciting guy there. I think he's going to get more opportunities than those other guys. I think he's going to fill it up. I think he's going to score a lot.
Do we have any dark horses? Anyone, like, is there any, like, maybe Josh Giddey gets a ton of,
if he's going to play a lot, he'll get a chance, right? Yeah.
Davion Mitchell, if Sacramento is
turns out to be not enough offense.
His issue will be scoring. I do think, you know, Davion Mitchell is going to be, I bet he's going to be like a coach's favorite. So like when you get coach guys on TV, they're going to love him. I mean, I love watching him play defense, right? Like he's physical without being like a Miami Heat player. You know, it's very interesting defense that he plays. All right. You guys ready to move on or anybody else on rookie of the year? Good. All right. Coach of the year. And this one, we got four. This is the only one that we got four different votes for, which coach of the year. I mean, it's such a subjective award and we're all grading it on different things. Rick Carlisle, Nate McMillan, Ty Lue, and Nick Nurse are our choices. And honestly, like I could see any of these four, like you can see the path to any of these four winning. For Carlisle, he's going to probably give him a 5-win bump in Indiana just by being he's one of the five best coaches in the league. He's going to give them a confidence bump. Already they're getting Sabonis like out of the way on offense, which is going to open things up for them. So you see the difference there. Nate McMillan, we already saw the Nate McMillan bump. I mean, there's an argument to be made. This is the most talented offensive team he's ever had a chance to coach. And we know what he does for defenses. And this is going to be a full season with a camp. Ty Lue, no Kawhi Leonard. If they over exceed expectations, Paul George is probably in MVP conversations. Ty Lue definitely in coach of the year conversations. And Nick Nurse, another one. Kyle Lowry out. That team has reshuffled quite a bit. I mean, if they're like, this was your pick, Mo. If Toronto is the sixth seed, fifth seed, is Nick Nurse in that conversation, you think?
I mean, if they're for sure. I think it's always about just exceeding expectations. But even if they're the seventh seed, I think they're going to be right there in that conversation. It's always the coach who kind of really makes that jump. I think the thing with Nate McMillan is there are expectations in Atlanta now. There's not – they have to be the number one seed or the two seed in the East to get there. You know, I think Ty Lue, it's just going to be tough with the Clippers. I don't know. I think Paul George is going to have a great year. I just don't know if there's enough there to really kind of push those expectations. I like Carlisle, but Indiana's Indiana to me. I just, they're the same every year. I don't know how much Carlisle will change things. With Nurse, I just think, first off, I'm very high on Toronto just on the pure fact of them being in Toronto. I think the way they kind of all of a sudden had to jump to Tampa Bay, completely put them behind the eight ball for the rest of the season, and then everything that had followed with it. It was just an incredibly weird year. So I think the
expectation- we haven't talked about that enough. But like we've talked quite a bit about the schedule crushing all these other teams, but last year we really didn't mention enough that it was a last minute thing for the whole organization, you know, all the players and everyone to just uproot their lives and move to Tampa. I mean, Fred VanVleet was talking about how it was just nice to be in his house.
Yeah, and so I just think that alone is a huge bump for them. And I think that that will take them a lot further. So that's why I'm just – I think they're going to exceed expectations. So by my – the way I tend to envision the Coach of the Year award going, I think it's going to be him.
Ben, your argument for Ty Lue?
Let's get our crack research team on this.
Is it, did I nail it?
You absolutely nailed it. I think Carlisle, as I've alluded to earlier, is a guy who I also really considered. I kind of agree with Mo if he means that, like, the Pacers have a hard ceiling. And I don't think – I think they've done too well in the past to maybe go too far past that hard ceiling. Like, I don't – Pacers aren't going to go out and win 57 games. I like the Nick Nurse argument, obviously. I think super highly of Nick Nurse as a coach. And I kind of love this Raptors team secretly. And I, like, I think they're going to be plenty good. I don't think they're going to be super good or anything like that. I can't believe we made it through the rookie section without talking about Scottie Barnes. But yeah, if obviously he's going to be there. Has Nick Nurse won the award? Didn't he win it?
He won it the year he won the title, right?
Let's get our crack research team on this.
Anyway, if he hasn't won it, then I think that gives him some extra narrative steam, because I do think you're going to get that rubber band effect with
Nurse won it in 20.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, so that's why I didn't pick him. Yeah.
Like, I picked Carlisle just because I think that they're primed from having come off a rough coaching situation combined with a rough health situation to just be better, just kind of by sort of like kind of the natural filling in the hole. And then Carlisle for a roster that kind of requires some offensive creativity, a coach who has some of that. I do think it's funny though, that we're bringing up kind of the narrative degree of difficulty for Ty Lue and not mentioning Steve Nash. I think he did a really nice job last year. You know, he kind of almost staying out of the way and learning as he went. And then showing like really good preparation and versatility in the playoffs. I thought he coached a hell of a series against the Bucks. And his coaching job, as always, is going to be much more about almost the not X's and O's stuff. It's going to be about like navigating this like nonsense with Kyrie. It's going to be about, he's got a deep roster with, I think I saw somewhere this year, they're going to use like 7 different guys as like normal centers. And, you know, it's nice to have a lot of options, but that means you have to make a lot of choices. So secretly, the Nets are kind of a high degree of difficulty spot, though kind of the thing against them is the expectations there are so high, it's going to be hard for him to exceed them.
The two things that Seth, that I want to say, one is I agree with you on Nash, but Nash should have probably had more consideration last year than this year. I think this year will be a little bit of an easier coaching job than that. Not easy, but easier than last year because of all the injuries. I think this team's deeper, all that stuff. We can talk about the Nets another day. I'm sure they'll be spoken about a lot. The Indiana Pacers for me is, what does that look like? Do you think they're a playoff team, like with outright, or are they a play-in team? Are they, like, when we talk about what Rick Carlisle is going to bring, like, I just don't see them being a top 6 team in the East.
Like a real playoff team, not in the play-in.
Yeah, I mean, they were in the play-in last year and then lost in the second game of the play-in. I don't see them being anything more than that. I mean, like, maybe they win the play-in tournament and get in, but, like, I don't see them being a top 6
team. I don't think they can be better than Boston, Philly, Miami, Atlanta, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee.
See, I think the East is – someone said earlier that the West is stacked. I think it's the opposite. I think the East has kind of – more horses. You know, we can go tit for tat on actual title contenders, but when everyone's healthy. But I think when you size up the season, I see, as long as these guys stay healthy or remotely healthy, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Milwaukee.
Could this just be who has the best record? The coach, that coach wins. Like, could this be a season where that's kind of how it works? Because it does feel like generally there's an acceptance that there's more parity throughout the league right now. It feels more wide open. You know, if you, aside from Brooklyn, if you took Brooklyn out of it, and without Kyrie, I don't know that anyone feels like they are as guaranteed.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
It does feel like anybody could kind of be the champ, and in particular because some of the favorites are relying on guys who have either an injury history or age. You know, I mean, the Lakers are literally are the, just the cast of Cocoon playing basketball.
If Frank Vogel gets the Lakers to be stay a top five defense with that roster,
give it to impressive.
Name the award after him. Like it's like that's where
All right,
everybody's got different hurdles to jump.
All right, let's move on. Last year we were doing comeback player of the year, and we were talking about guys coming back from injury, and it's always just who was the best guy coming back from injury. So Seth said, "What about the guy that comes back from sucking?" And not just a guy who's always sucked, but a guy who was pretty good and maybe just sucked for a little bit. So the comeback from sucking award this year, we got three different guys. We got Kemba Walker. We got two votes for Kristaps Porzingis, and we got a vote for Tyler Hero. And I think we can all agree. Now, Kemba has the health issue. Porzingis has the health issue, obviously. But both of those guys played last year, who looked awful, but Tyler Hero last year, Mo, all right, you picked him, Mo. He was on my list after what he showed us in the bubble. I just, was he not just a victim of just mistaken expectations? Like the bubble was fake, right? The bubble was fake.
Let me push back on that a little bit.
Please.
I mean, there were for sure, unrealistic expectations, which happens all the time with however we do this stuff, right? But the thing is, I think he was a victim more of that shortened span of the finals and then going into the season. Now, I kind of said, I thought he wasn't going to have that great of a year last year because of that. And because we kind of saw the leap during the bubble run, right? And so I was like, not enough time for him to have really developed anything because he's got to rest, all that stuff and things like that. I didn't think he would be as bad as he was, but last year, I didn't think he was really, I thought he was a real problem for the Heat, but I think there's going to be a bounce back this year. I think also having Kyle Lowry kind of eases things for him a little bit. I think at times the Heat were trying to make him a point guard, which isn't who Tyler Hero is. And if that's what you're doing, then you're going to be, you're basically trying to hire a plumber when you need a roofer. Like, I think those are the issues that you're having with that stuff. And I think that's why I think they kind of have found the role for him. I think he's going to slide right in. I think that's why Tyler Hero's the comeback from sucking award.
Just like a plumber doing your roof, Tyler Hero was in a shitty situation. And like this year, they will need him to score. Like,
shouldn't that be the opposite way around? Like a roofer doing.
I said plumber first was the problem, and that was the thing. And
what is going on?
Tyler Hero is going to have to score for this team because they just don't have a lot of it, right? So there's going to be an opportunity here. Mo, would you say, like, is 18 points a game for him on the table? 16 to 18 points a game.
I think that's right in the range. I think he's, and there are going to be some nights where he's going to explode. You know, I think he has that ability in him. And I think just a overall, again, with the Heat, I think just a better vibe with that team. I think Kyle Lowry, a breath of fresh air. I think there's a lot of things that come into it. So, you know, and here's the thing. And this is, I'm going to take shots at you guys who'd pick the other guys, right? All those injury concerns still there with those guys.
That's a good point. What's
we're talking about situation, and Mo brought up a good a good point when we're talking about the last award, about Coach of the Year, in terms of the Raptors and a guy coming back from kind of an odd situation. And it led to some, it contributed, I would guess, to some weirdness with the organization. He was still being played kind of in not his best role for kind of the second year in a row. And another person I considered for this spot was Pascal Siakam. So kind of getting that comfort back to him. Now, whether or not the Raptors have added enough around him to not need him to try to be kind of the lead scorer again, I don't know, because he's been a player who, again, has been very miscast in that role the last couple of years. But I think if we're talking about, you know, easing back into just more kind of life comfort almost, he's a guy who doesn't have those injury concerns, who is a pretty good player, who has a chance to get back to the level he was, you know, 2-3 years ago.
And might be playing for the Coach of the Year, right? So, you know, I mean, it's not like he's not hampered by coaching. No, Porzingis is interesting, okay? Because Porzingis has had a couple of seasons of weird injury stuff. He looked fantastic right before the season shut down in early spring of 2020. Looked fantastic. Came back, looked really good in the bubble, then got hurt. And things have just gone south from there. Obviously had the whole mix up with rehab versus surgery, and then they changed the start date of the season. So through no fault of his own, he has missed multiple training camps. I mean, including like the not even getting to finish the bubble because he got injured. Didn't have a training camp start last season. Never really looked right. And in the preseason so far, Seth, I mean, I don't know if this is why you have him on your list, but he looks great. He is moving as well as he's looked since spring of 2020. And I would argue as well as he looked since he got to Dallas. Like, he looks good. So with between him looking healthy and us, you know, an expectation of maybe even a little bit more from Luka, I think Porzingis has a really good chance because he's going to have the eyeballs on him. I think he's got a good chance to be a guy who is like, oh, you know who's good again? That Porzingis guy can play. And all of a sudden, you know, nobody's trying to put him in the trade machine, you know?
Well, I mean, if nobody's going to jump in, then I'll jump in. He always gets hurt.
That's the issue.
I mean, that's the thing.
It's can just, he stay healthy?
You can't. It's so hard to bank on that, you know? And he has flashes. He looks good. He has a run where he looks good. And then he misses four games.
Is there a point with Porzingis that they need to get to, you guys think, where it's almost he's on the Kawhi plan? You're 60 to 65 games because we need you in the playoffs.
He's a 7'3" guy with lower body issues. I think that you know, the going in with the expectation of, yeah, no, he's going to go play 82 games. It'll be fine.
You think that's been the mistake most of this time?
Yeah, I think that, you know, after, you know, hindsight being 2020, kind of after the ACL injury, it should have been, okay, this is a guy we're going to have to manage because, you know, there's already kind of a very extended kind of kinetic chain going on here. And there's a lot that can go wrong quickly. And so, we've got a lot invested, both, you know, from a financial standpoint, but also our team, like having him on the floor in the playoffs and at his peak and getting him there has got to be as much the focus as, you know, getting him on the floor for as many regular season games as minutes as possible.
Yeah. Ben, you picked Kemba, health aside, right? Cause the health is, we can't like predict it. Although, you know, we can certainly look at history cause it can paint a picture. Health aside, Kemba's going to have opportunities. Tom Thibodeau, we know what he does with point guards on offense. Is that kind of your reasoning here?
I just don't understand this award, so I had to take someone who was injured and now might be slightly less injured. I'm with Mo, and then I think everyone that has an injury problem still has an injury problem. I just think there's no official voting body on this, but I still went with narrative.
We are like the official voting body.
It's us. Kemba's going back to New York City. That might, maybe going back to New York City helps his knee not act up for more than 20 games during the year. I don't know. That was, I think all the names you guys have discussed were the names I had on my board. Ironically, this is the first award where you've hit every name I've had on my board.
Okay. Well, Kemba should have had to go to the Knicks right out of college, by the way. I
I shouldn't say that, actually. I had Vucevic because I wasn't sure if he counts as sucking last year.
No, he just got traded. All right, most improved. And now this one is tricky, right? But we set some parameters. We're looking for younger guys taking a leap, but not like second year guys. Okay. And here's our voting. Okay. We got a vote for Michael Porter Jr., which absolutely makes a lot of sense. OG Anunoby and Jordan Poole. We got two votes for Poole. Who are my Poole voters? Ben and Mo. All right. Well, I'm gonna start with Mo. Mo, Jordan Poole, you believe in this? You think this is real?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I probably would have gone Michael Porter Jr. before the preseason, but just watching Poole kind of evolve, you know, even from summer league into the preseason, I'm going like he's really important. And I think he's going to play such an important role for the Warriors, kind of bridging them to Klay Thompson coming back. I mean, Dave, this is like the third podcast in a row I've spoken about Jordan Poole. Like, it's a little odd. I would have never thought this was going to happen, you know, if you asked me a month ago, you know, before the preseason began. But it's like, I just think he's that guy right now. And I think the eyes are going to be on him with Golden State. If Golden State especially starts out well with him kind of being able to help in the second unit in particular, I think that's going to just open the door for him.
And this is why Ben Taylor is going to pick the Warriors to win the title, right? This is what you've wanted to talk about the Warriors. What's the whole time. On? And I'm assuming it's because of Jordan Poole.
Well, no, but that's for later. Look,
nobody has ever gone wrong with bold preseason predictions
about the Warriors
for the Warriors on this podcast.
Everything Mo just said, Dave, about Jordan Poole is true. And you watch guys in the preseason sometimes and you can clearly see we've mentioned it a number of times on this podcast. They look healthier. They have a step, things like that. I watch Poole. And I don't think people realize what is potentially coming. Like, he's going to fill in essentially for Klay Thompson. He has no issue taking 14 threes in a game. Even if he's down in like 36-37% range, I still think this is a guy who in that system with the motion that they have and what they've been trying to cultivate for 2 years and patiently building toward, you add players like him, and it's not just him. He's not going to be out there by himself with Curry. It's Otto Porter. It's Andrew Wiggins. It's having more adults in the room. Bielitsa as a high post passer. Iguodala out there as another feeder from the elbow in this system. Poole has some of this Klay Curry pedigree with learning how to cut, the back cuts, the overplays. His release is insanely quick. He's got a step back so he can self-generate. Like, I'm not talking about an all-star player. I'm talking about a guy, though, that is going to go out there, play big minutes, and what, Mo, what do you think? 17 to 20 points a game, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we're looking at, especially early on. I think that's going to be the big thing.
Seth is shaking his head in disapproval.
He's shaking his head every time I've spoken today, by the way, folks. I just want you to know that.
I watched.
No, I'm warning the cat from.
Oh, no, let the cat go.
I watched a lot of Poole in the G League bubble. Look, I think it's real. I just don't. How does it hold up to higher volume? You know what I mean? Like, there's just a lot. There's a lot there. That being said, I think it's a good pick because I think he's going to be good. Seth, you picked Michael Porter Jr. I don't feel like I need to explain the OG. I've been picking him for 3 years. It's there. I think he could be a 1B to Siakam's 1A, and he's got the coaching. They're back in Toronto. Things are going to be a little bit more normal. We know what he does on the defensive end. I just need to see a little bit more, you know, juice from him off the dribble. And when that comes, I mean, this guy, I don't know, the sky's the limit for OG.
He's got it, though. He's got it.
I know, but I mean, putting it together and actually doing it on the court night in, night out, there's a difference between showing flashes of it and actually doing it and leading a team every night.
See, I think this is part of the Toronto situation. Like,
absolutely.
Even if he doesn't get there to, you know, Kawhi 2015 levels or something, that's coming along. Siakam is going to have a slightly easier role because they've got all these players who can play with defined roles. Like, and again, you're not talking about the expectations of a 55 win team anymore. You're talking about a scrappy team with a ton of interchangeable parts. I considered him for this. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And OG and Scotty defensively are going to be really interesting.
The whole thing. Siakam, Precious, Boucher, OG, like all of them out there at once is mm-hmm. going to be fun.
All right, Seth, you pick so Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, so after not having to talk about OG, let's talk about Michael Porter. No, I think that this is going to be – last year we saw some really good stuff from Michael Porter Jr. in a very defined role. This is an interesting thing we saw from him after Murray got hurt is his basically entire season had been played working along the baselines, whether playing out of corner threes, crashing the boards from out there, and he'd been very effective at doing that. After that injury, he had to come up to the top of the floor, play in the middle, try to initiate a little bit more with – mixed success, I would say. And then certainly into the playoffs, it was up and down. I think he's going to be in a spot to do that all year. And if he kind of starts to become the player the way he already is talked about in some ways, that's going to be a pretty big step forward, not just for him, but for the Nuggets. I mean, especially, you know, Murray comes back, you've got, you know, not to reduce everything to, you know, my own work, but then you have like the tier one guy in Jokic, and then you have a couple other guys who are, you know, to a high tier three guys if he starts to do that. That's a championship level roster. So if he gets to that point, I think not only does he win this award, it's a makes the Nuggets a really interesting playoff prospect next year.
The one thing I'll add about him in particular that I really like that I think I considered him as well is he physically looks stronger on penetration. So it's less of that one dimensionality that you alluded to and more of, hey, I know I'm going to have a bigger role all year when I attack off the dribble, or now I can learn how to mix in my I'm 6'11", I'll shoot over you. But oh, I'm going to get you on my shoulder. He just looks better in those spots getting to the hoop in preseason to me. And I think that facilitates the kind of volume expansion that I think we are trying to honor in this award.
He was my pick if I didn't fall in love with Jordan Poole.
There you go. I mean, and Poole is fun as hell to watch, so I get it. Michael Porter Jr. is so good at using his physicality as a cutter, and it is nice now to see some of that leach into his on-ball game. I'm with you, Ben. Ben, look, could he score 25 points a game this year?
Easy.
Right? Easy, right? Like, I mean, and to me, he's a guy that with the way he shoots it, is it crazy if he was 28 to 30 points a game this year or next year? And now next year maybe gets tricky just because you have Jamal Murray back, but they're going to need guys to score. You know, Jokic is going to find him, and the guy has no hesitancy when it comes to taking the shot. I mean, he could really shock us this year. I think he's going to get the opportunity. All right.
Real quick, I just want to give everybody a report. The cat is inching closer.
Yeah.
We might have been getting the long-awaited cat attack that I've been dreaming of all podcast.
We're going to go into David Attenborough mode here in a moment.
Dave, how did you resist from picking Rob Williams for that award?
I don't know, man.
Are you out on him?
No.
Wait. When did Dave become the Rob Williams guy on this podcast?
Dave loves Rob Williams. You don't know this?
I'm just saying.
Like, I was early on Rob Williams. I don't know. I think I got you to Rob Williams.
No.
Maybe. All right. Well, look, I think Rob Williams,
especially. We can go back and read my.
Let's go.
Here's what we've got.
We
got
to move on, guys.
Okay. Rob Williams with Horford is going to be interesting. But I worry that Horford actually will, because more offense will go through Horford than Rob Williams when they share the court together. That's going to hold him back.
He's playing 19 minutes a game. Don't worry about it.
All right. We're going to the champs. This is it. We are choosing the champs. They don't even have to play the season. Okay. Now, I want to start with Ben, because Ben gave me the only answer that was kind of out of left field. The three of us, we picked, I picked the Nets. I'm pretty, Seth, you picked the Nets, and Mo, you picked the Bucks. Okay.
No, I picked the Nets.
Oh, sorry. You picked the Nets. I picked the Bucks. My bad. Mix that up on my sheet. I think the Bucks can repeat. Yeah. I wrote Nets next to my own name, and even though I picked it, I just read it. You know, I feel like the Anchorman. But Ben picked the Utah Jazz.
Now, that's right, let's go.
But you did not mention Donovan Mitchell the entire time we were talking about MVP guys, the entire time we were talking about, like, I mean, not maybe even most improved. Are you expect? Is this a Gobert-led championship, or do you think Donovan Mitchell is going to actually be like an MVP caliber player this year?
No, he's going to have to be like a top 10 to 15,
30 points a game player. 30 points a game.
Okay, so here's the thing with Mitchell.
He's a dark horse MVP guy to me. So is Trae Young.
Sort of. sort of. I have a Mitchell take, and I guess it makes it fall into a dark horse MVP. If you watch him in the playoffs, last 2 years, he's got some of the craziest kind of volume scoring numbers you'll ever see. And it's coming from this combination of insane first step off the bounce with the space in the game and his pull-up three being on and like really on. And I think the jury's out. Like, I think it's not the most likely thing, but I could see him in a playoff run. You don't ever want to just casually evoke like 2006 Dwayne Wade, because I don't think it would be quite at that level. Wade was a two-way guy even back then. But if he has a run like that, and the thing is kind of open, we've talked about parity, and the other big one is Mike Conley being healthy. And they just, that team was just so gutted in the playoffs last year, and I think they were so close to actually going through and winning the title. That was sort of my thinking. I had 9 teams as candidates, and I had my top 4 were the other, 2 of them were the other guys you picked. And I think, Dave, as I've alluded to, man, Golden State's really good. Like, I don't think they're going to have what it takes in the end, but I think you guys are sleeping on them. That's all I'm going to say.
I like the Jazz pick because I also see the blueprint. They've got one glaring weakness that they have to solve. Unfortunately, the playoffs really highlights that weakness. I mean, they ran into a Clippers team that was the perfect team to beat them the way they did.
You mean dribble penetration?
Dribble penetration, right? Like, yeah, they got to solve that.
So they had a really bad matchup with a 5-out offense that wanted to play that way, and they had no guards to defend because they were injured.
They were all hurt. But also, let's just be honest. They're not really – they don't have anybody who can hold up all that great anyway. Like, they didn't have a Kawhi stopper.
Maybe
Conley
against smaller guards.
Maybe, right?
But that's sort of an under-discussed aspect of Mitchell. And I think the Donovan Mitchell debate is probably, between me and Ben, is probably best left for another situation. But his defensive issues.
Apathy.
Is something that's worth discussing in this context, but we can leave that for another day.
But I like this Jazz pick. I'll defend my Bucks pick. This is not hard. They just want a title.
Nothing to defend.
They just want a title. I don't know if y'all remember, but I'm
going to defend taking the favorite. That's chalk that brought back the same team.
They got the best player in the league, best defender in the league.
You picked Rudy Gobert. You picked Rudy Gobert to be the best defender.
Defensive player of the year is not best defender.
Different thing.
That's true.
The other thing to say for the Bucks is they did make a number of nice little moves around the edges.
They did. I like bringing George Hill back to take those Bryn Forbes minutes were not great for
Grayson
them.
Grayson Allen for basically nothing. Like, that's, you know. Yeah. On that PJ Tucker role. Like, these are good.
Yeah. Like, they leaned in the direction they needed to lean, where they got some more shooting that is going to be on the court in the playoffs for them. And I thought that was a good move. So I'm taking the Bucks. The Nets one is also obvious, but let me ask you guys, and I'll start with Mo. Are you worried that the distractions are actually going to affect the on the court to the degree where it's just hard to get the chemistry that they need? Like, do you think it's going to be too big of a deal for them to overcome?
No, because I think they've already made their decision. Either you're in or you're out. If he was trying to be a part-time player, I probably would have changed my vote. But you're either in or you're out. It's that simple. You know, now their margin of error has dropped. Or has dropped significantly. Dropped significantly. I'm struggling with analogies today. They're a deeper team than they were last year. I love the Patty Mills pickup. I love the James Johnson pickup. I think people are sleeping on Javon Carter. Even John Hollinger last week was mentioning it. Cam Thomas, I'm not sure how many minutes he's going to get in the regular season once the rotation gets going. So without Kyrie, they're not as big of favorites to me, right? And then it's neck and neck with them and Milwaukee. I mean, Dave, you could ask me tomorrow and I might decide the Bucks. Like, it's
right.
It's,
well, and I think that's going to be all year,
and
right?
It's neck and neck. So for me, it's along those lines of, you know, they're even without Kyrie, I think they're great. I think, like I said, KD to win the MVP. I think this is a team that still has a great chance to win the championship. And I think they got rid of the distraction.
Seth, are they going to have to make up for the lost production?
No.
They're just going to have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no,
right? Like,
I mean,
that's the thing, no, right? Their offense is going to be like you. What is the number that we figured out? You can't get better than this. They already are at that number. And so basically they can get better. Like they could potentially get themselves better on the defensive end and still not drop off on offense, right?
The thing that is it's margin for error isn't so much of is more about like injuries than it is about, you know, goodness on the court. They have two of the best six players in the league, probably, and arguably two of the two best offensive engines in the league. I mean, and a very competent, versatile supporting cast. I don't see why you need to overthink this and say that it even without and frankly, I think Mo put it perfectly. I think with him in, they're the overwhelming favorites. With him out, they are the substantial, less so, but the substantial favorite. If it was a game by game thing, that's when the weirdness and distractions and then, you know, KD getting pissy and you know, everyone having to answer the same questions every day it might prove to be a real distraction. But
we can already see they're annoyed by it.
Yeah, they're annoyed, but they're annoyed by it in a way that's like it's sort of the you know, the common enemy kind of thing. So it's just like if you guys here today or not, then it's a different thing. But it's like, you know, later for that guy, we're going to go win a championship. Yeah, I think that's straightforward for them. If KD and Harden are healthy in the playoffs.
I expect them to have their full team by the time the playoffs roll around. That's my guess. I mean, the backpedaling and stuff is already starting publicly. So, you know, I think everybody's going to be there. I still think this team can lose even at full health, though.
Can I ask the group something?
Yes.
Based on exactly what you just said. Like, you guys don't think there's a fairly large concern for this team's defense not really holding up? Like, in other words, what we saw last year was kind of, it's just changing of the tides in the NBA. There's a lot of stuff going on. Now we finally have a settled 82-game season. There's new rules in place in terms of the fouling that helps defenders. Like I'm trying to wrap my head around because I came into this exercise and it feels like I'm in a different league than you guys where the Nets were my first pick. I'm like, I'm stacking this up. I'm like, okay, you got to look at the Nets, but I see a ton of red flags and it feels wide open, but you guys are talking about it like it's the Nets are like the 0-1 Lakers or something. Do you guys have these concerns?
I think if the Bucks wanted to, they could win 70 games this season. I think the Bucks are good enough to do that.
I don't think any team in the league can win 70 games.
I think the Bucks could. Obviously, this depends on Giannis being healthy and stuff like that. But like, I actually think the Bucks, and with their defense and the way it's built for the regular season and the sustainability of it, I actually think they could win like somewhere in that 67 to 70 games. I don't think that they're pushing for that because, as we talked about, Giannis is going to have to take some nights off. But I think the Nets could do the same thing because of their offense.
Let me answer your question, though, about the defense, because the one thing I was surprised about the Nets in the playoffs was their defense was actually significantly better
than the
regular season. It was a thing. So there's, to me, even if their defense isn't that good in the regular season this year, they've given me proof that they can step it up in come playoff time. I think they've also added guys that are a little bit better defensively. I think James, I'm in on the James Johnson pickup. I thought that was a really good opportunity for them to kind of sneak in there. I think, you know, they're going to improve. I think Patty Mills is a sneaky, just pest, annoys the crap out of you type dude, and gets opportune steals. I think KD's going to be better defensively a year after, you know, a one full season under his belt. I think this, I'm not as concerned. And again, their offense is just so overwhelmingly good.
What does their defense need to be for you to feel comfortable going into the playoffs, Ben? Like, I mean, you know, and you almost can't even say, well, they need to be top 15 because it doesn't matter. Like we saw that Cleveland Cavaliers team the year that they went to the finals with what 29th ranked defense during the regular season or something ridiculous. Because they're going to be able to score enough that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but that offense was insane.
Yeah. So, and you don't think this offense can get close to that level?
No, they can, of course. Okay. I think part of the big assumption and part of the problem I'm having is that as good as the Nets are on offense, people continue to talk about them like they're going to sustain a margin of like 10 to 12 points better against their defenses they're facing than everyone else. And that's just literally the best offenses ever. We didn't see evidence of that last year. Small samples, weird stuff going on, so I don't know what to make of it. But there is a difference in this conversation between saying like, hey, when we trot you out against a good defense, you're going to have a 115, 116 offensive rating, and talking about it like, yeah, they're just going to drop a 125 offensive rating in every series and their defense doesn't matter. So it's both sides of the ball for me, where they held up incredibly well playing small last year. I still don't know if that was some kind of fool's gold or just the sample they were going. Like, what they got away with against the Bucks at times felt off to me. We talked about it ad nauseum at the time. Yeah. So I just feel like, as good as they can be, I see a wide range of outcomes, but it doesn't sound like you guys are as concerned about that stuff.
Oh, I mean, look, I think the Bucks can beat the Nets at full health in a 7-game series. I think the Bucks are good enough to do it. Right? They're versatile enough defensively. I think that, I mean, we know that they can score enough on the offensive end. I don't know that the Nets defense can hold up enough against a team like the Bucks to beat them in 7.
I think it's just a toss up. Listen, again, if Kyrie was in the fold, to me, it's different, because then I don't think the Bucks can keep up with them offensively. I really don't. And we saw it in the first two games of that series, you know, and they got really kind of run out. And that was without James Harden. I think the ultimate thing is, now with it just being KD and Harden, and that's the way I'm going through it the whole way, I don't have the same faith as you, Dave, that they're going to have the full roster come playoff time. It's a toss up. This one's really close. It's not a matter of, I think the Nets are overwhelmingly favorites over the Bucks now. And I think right now it's close, and it's going to be a 7-game series either way.
I do like that Ben is leaning into Utah as this year's Milwaukee, though. Look, I like the Utah pick a lot, and I think Utah is going to surprise people with how much they experiment this year. I don't know how much you've seen so far, but I do think that they are going to do things differently in the regular season.
And there's sort of a historical influence in that every time we get one of these little changing of the tides, you get like an 11 Mavericks, 79 Sonics, you get like a team that kind of pushes through, and those teams are always veteran laden teams that have been through the kind of the wars. So, I mean, once again, Dave asked me for these picks 4 minutes before we recorded. So
this is just not true.
Inaccurate. We're not allowing this, Ben.
We booked Ben Taylor a week ago.
Thinking basketball should be constantly thinking. Thinking basketball should be ready.
The unofficial fourth member of the Nerder crew, Mr. Ben Taylor. That's at ELGEE35 on Twitter. And Thinking Basketball is the YouTube channel and the podcast and the Patreon.
And Dave is coming on next week for our 17th annual preview show.
I love that we just preview everything. We've previewed anything we can playoffs. We preview the regular season. Yeah, it's going to be fun. Thank you, Ben, as always. For Seth, for Mo, I'm Dave. This is the Athletic NBA Show. This has been Nerder, She Wrote. We'll talk to you guys next week, because the regular season kicks off in only a couple days.